Despite the economic recovery, confidence in the share market is falling, according to the latest investor sentiment index released by the Investment and Financial Services Association. It's just over a year ago that the All Ordinaries Index dropped to 3,111. Then it rose 54% over the next 7 months, and it's pretty much held its level since then. But if you switched your super from shares to cash when the market was at its lowest, you've lost even more money. It's hard to fathom, isn't it? Which is why investing in shares, well, it seems risky. What does the research say? With me now is Andrew Lee, Professor of Economics at the Australian National University. Hi, Andrew.
G'day, Richard.
Now, I bought Telstra shares, Andrew, T2. I can think of worse decisions that I've made, but I can think of many more better ones. There are quite a few people like me. Are shares a good investment?
Well, Richard, it turned out in that case, you, at least as far as we know, the information we have at the moment, you didn't make a great decision. But on the whole, shares are the best place to put your money for the very long run. If you want a return next year, they're not a very safe investment. But if you're looking for a return over a couple of decades, it's pretty hard to beat shares.
So better than property, because people always say about property, you know, they're not making any more of it.
That's better than property, better than bonds. Certainly, it's if you're in it for the long haul, then the historical returns on shares in Australia and elsewhere have outperformed other investments.
Now, I used to know people who took this quite seriously and kind of managed their portfolio. It seemed like a lot of hard work. Do active investors like that do better?
Well, the problem with active investors is often they think they can take a piece of obvious information and use it to beat the stock market. So, for example, people say, well, there's been a baby boom recently, so let's go out and invest in companies that make toys because toy companies are going to do well. Trouble is, that piece of obvious information is already factored into the share price. Any obvious piece of information you have is already going to be there. The only way you can beat the market is if you somehow stumble upon a piece of information which other traders don't have, either because you're an insider or because you happen to overhear a conversation on a bus. But unless you've got some bit of information like that, you're not going to be able to beat the market.
Actually, isn't it? It quickly can become illegal if you have inside information, can't it?
That's absolutely right. Yes, yes. So certainly, if you enjoy buying and selling shares, then that's terrific. But a buy and hold strategy tends to be the most efficient. And I like to think of the analogy of a supermarket. You know, you'll often be standing in the supermarket queue, and you'll see the line next to you looks as though it's going a little bit quicker.
Yes.
But actually, when you switch, you pay a cost. You go to the end of that next line, and at least in my experience, it turns out that pick one line and stay in it is the most efficient way of getting out of the supermarket, and that kind of tends to work with shares as well.
Well, so Alan Jones is right, pick and stick. You can buy shares through managed funds. A lot of people do this, where someone else, an expert, probably generally a very well-paid expert, makes the decisions for you. How do they go?
Well, you've hit on the rub there, Richard. It's that the expert is taking a fee. If the expert was prepared to work for free, they might well outperform the stock market. But certainly there's a terrific book by Burton Malkiel called A Random Walk Down Wall Street. And what Malkiel does is he looks at the performance of managed funds over time. Turns out that very few managed funds beat the All Ordinaries Index or the S&P 500 in the case of the US. And that's typically because they need to take their cut. They have to pay for those nice suits and corner offices, and that's coming out of your returns.
But you see advertising saying, you know, we're 40% ahead of the market over the last 10 years.
It's certainly true that at any given time, there are managed funds which have beaten the market. The trouble is, Malkiel has a very nice point. He looks at the funds which outperformed the market in the 1980s, and it turns out they underperformed the market in the 1990s. So, you know, it's the dart-throwing monkeys thing. If you throw a bunch of darts at the stock pages and buy those stocks, and you do that a dozen times, then one of those monkeys is going to outperform the market. The challenge is whether they're going to do it again and again and again.
What about the index funds? Now, I've heard of these. I only have a vague idea of what they are.
Well, an index fund is essentially just a computer program which is giving you a representative slice of the stock market. So if a company represents 2% of the stock market, it'll represent 2% of an index fund. And what that means is effectively you've cut out the overheads. The overheads for an index fund are trivial, and you're just tracking the market. So you'll never beat the market with an index fund, but you'll never be behind the market either. And certainly the argument that Malkiel makes is that an index fund is the best place to put your money. That's unless you find it a lot of fun. I mean, if you really enjoy the following companies, reading annual reports, you really get into that stuff, well, that's terrific. You should do it. But you should realise you're doing it mostly for pleasure rather than because it's going to make you a lot more money in the long run.
On Life Matters today, it's Right Side Economics, actually. Andrew Lee, who we have every couple of weeks at this time, we're talking about investing in the share market. I think if you find that sort of thing fun, you really need to get out more. But I have a small house and I don't have a boat, and I think those things are probably connected. Can I just say, Andrew, if people know this, if they know that essentially managed funds don't beat the market and index funds essentially are better, why are there all these managed funds?
Well, certainly the part of it is a sales job, and so managed funds are very good at arguing that they're going to be a better place to put your money. I think index funds, part of the reason that they have low fees is they don't advertise very much, and perhaps they haven't been very good in sort of getting their message out. The notion that we can be smarter than the herd is a sort of captivating one. The idea that we can hire a manager who's going to beat the rest of the market, you know, that's a tempting proposition. But when you think about who the typical players are in these markets, they're very well informed. They've read all the same annual reports as you've read. They've looked at the demographic projections. The odds that your expert is going to beat the next person's expert actually turn out to be pretty low.
So who should have money invested in shares, perhaps through an index fund? Because if you're buying a property, you probably haven't got a lot to spare.
That's exactly right. So, you know, the financial planners often say that if you're in your 20s or 30s, you should have half your money in stocks. That's pretty hard advice to follow if you're in a big city and you want to buy a house. And so many of us sort of struggle to meet that wisdom. When you're in your 20s and 30s is the time to take that volatility and to experience the exciting swings and roundabouts that have been the stock market over the last couple of years. And you want to sort of be moving out of stocks as you're getting close to retirement, and the point at which you'll start to draw down on your money. So it's sort of it's a tension there, as you say, between the fact that Australian property prices are very high, and that at precisely the time in your life when many of us are buying property, the economics are saying you should be investing in shares. You know, maybe the answer is to invest in shares for a little bit longer and save up, and so you're borrowing less money when you buy the house.
You tell me that now. So, yeah. Now, on another topic, Andrew, you've just released some of your own research on maternal age and child outcomes. What did you find?
So this is work with Zhadong Gong, Richard, and what we're trying to do is look at the cognitive outcomes of children born to older and younger mothers. Firstly, we just look at the simple relationship. It turns out that kids who are born to mums in their 20s tend to have lower outcomes than kids who are born to mums in their 30s, and the kids' outcomes pretty strongly track the mum's age. Now then we say, well, is this really causal, or is there something different about the kinds of mums who are having kids earlier and later? And it turns out that when you hold other things constant, for example, when you compare a married, high-income, high-educated mum who has kids in her 20s and kids in her 30s, then there's just no difference in the outcomes between those two parents. So maternal age seems to be a marker of disadvantage, not a cause of disadvantage.
Right, that has policy implications, doesn't it?
It does. So if you want to target disadvantage, you may well do well looking at mums who have kids at a young age. Not to say that every mum who has kids at a young age is going to be disadvantaged, but it's certainly there's a correlation there. But there's no sense in which policymakers would want to stop parents having kids early. It doesn't seem that for the same person having a child earlier is going to tangibly affect the outcomes of that child than if she and her partner waited a decade.
Andrew, you always make me think, which I think is probably good. Thank you very much for joining us once again.
Pleasure. Thanks, Richard.
Andrew Lee is Professor of Economics at the Australian National University, and he joins us each fortnight for Ryeside Economics. Coming up next on ABC Radio, on Life Matters on ABC Radio National, I should say, the importance of friendships at school.